The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number three of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Always a pleasure to say hello to our good friend, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. You can follow his work at cron.com as well as texassportsnation.com and on Twitter at McClain_on_NFL. He joins us now on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. John, how are you?
I'm great, John. How are you and Jimmy today?
Doing quite well. And tell me, what has been your reaction in seeing perhaps the Major League Baseball superstar of the day take on the Houston Astros that we've been treated to seemingly a new one each day over the last couple of weeks?
When you listen to the Major League Baseball players in other sports like LeBron James and other people in baseball, you would think the Astros never won a game that they didn't cheat over the last 3 years. And something I asked a friend of mine, I did a talk show in Baltimore, and I said, do you believe Rob Manfred that they cheated in 2017? He said, well, of course. I said, well, then why do you not believe him when he said they didn't cheat 2019? And the investigation did not show they were wearing devices, electronic devices, buzzers on their body, and he didn't have an answer. And we had a person, this was hilarious, go all the way back to 2014, showing Jose Altuve hitting home runs and coming to the plate, showing people waving off, don't rip off my jersey. And so, but you think that it's amazing. And also something about some of these guys, like Cody Bellinger started it. The Astros beat them in L.A. in the seventh game, and Bellinger hit, I think, like less than 135 in the World Series, left all kind of guys on base, and had a throwing error that let in two runs. And people said, well, you know, if you played a little bit better, you guys might have won. You might have won that series. But people don't want to hear it, and the Astros brought it on themselves by cheating. And something that a lot of my friends have asked me, they like to go to some games on the road, especially when they play the Rangers in Arlington. What happens when they proudly wear their Astros colors? Are they going to get insulted by the fans? Are they going to get in fights? Will there be extra security? Will the Astros have to have security, extra security in their dugout on the road? I think the first pitcher that hits an Astro, even if it's not on purpose, everybody's going to think it's on purpose. So the Astros just take it, keep their chin up. Do they retaliate? Do they have bench-clearing brawls? So, and as I reiterate, Rob Manfred explained he did not punish the players because they investigated before. Players wouldn't cooperate. They didn't have to cooperate. And then when they offered them immunity, then they cooperated. So everybody wants players suspended or something happened to them. It's not going to happen because they were promised immunity.
What do you think in terms of a lawsuit brought by some Astros fans in regards to this situation?
That was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. Like that pitcher for the Blue Jays blaming the Astros cheating for costing him his career. You know, people file frivolous lawsuits all the time. Our courts are tied up enough as it is. But lawyers can't wait to get some publicity out of this. And, of course, nothing's ever going to happen and come from it. But they'll be thrown out of court. But people can do that. People try to capitalize on it because of their ego.
Do you think the Astros World Series in 2017 should be vacated?
No, that was never a possibility. And is it tainted? Of course it is. It'll be tainted forever. But vacated, they don't do that. And he said he never considered that. And if they did, people, it's like in college, they say, okay, Reggie Bush didn't win the Heisman. Well, do we think Reggie Bush won the Heisman? Of course we do. And what the Astros need to do is they need to do like the Patriots. Patriots were severely penalized twice for cheating. But they won so many Super Bowls, nobody can remember how much it benefited them and how much and when So just come back and win. If the Astros come back and say they don't make the playoffs, or they, what if they have a losing record? Now, they got so much talent, that'd be hard to do. But they do have, you know, a new manager, Dusty Baker. They have a new GM in James Click, who's never been a GM. So they got some big shoes to fill as far as expertise when it comes to A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luno, both of whom were fired. So it's an unprecedented season in the history of baseball, and I can't wait to see how it plays out.
Carlos Correa said that Altuve did not participate in the cheating scheme. Do you believe that?
Yeah, I do, because he said that when a, and I would love to know, we're never going to know for sure, who was the ones doing the banging on the trash can. They've never said who benefited the most. I know there was a guy in Houston that went over every pitch that he could find, and he ran video for their designated hitter. Evan Gattis, one time, you could hear the trash can banging, which meant breaking pitch. Well, they threw breaking pitches, and he missed. So Mike Trout said, would I love to know what pitch is coming? I sure would. Well, you know what? They didn't know what pitch was coming. They knew fastball or breaking ball. Now, that makes a big difference, of course. But there's a lot of different breaking balls, and you still got to be able to hit it. So I don't believe that Altuve wore had a device that he wore. And the way Correa said that three guys, Altuve, Josh Reddick, and Tony Kemp, did not participate, I believe that, yes.
To football, Drew Brees will be back with the Saints for at least one more year. Does his presence make the Saints a Super Bowl contender again?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad he's back. The NFL's better with Drew Brees. The Saints are better with Drew Brees. All this talk about Taysom Hill replacing him as a starting quarterback. I read one nationally prominent person saying Hill could be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He's not even second-best quarterback on that team. That's Teddy Bridgewater.
That's right.
So people are getting carried away with a 29-year-old Swiss Army knife type of player. Every Saints fan should be on their knees happy that Brees is back.
Bridgewater, is he a better fit at Tampa Bay or Miami, or do you think he stays in New Orleans?
Jimmy, something to consider about the Buccaneers. Bruce Arians likes to take 5- and 7-step drops. He likes to send out all his receivers. He doesn't believe in keeping in tight ends and backs to block. And I remember one time when he was coaching Peyton Manning early in his career, and I was talking to Archie, and Archie was talking about how much Peyton gets hit in Bruce's system because of that. And so Bridgewater is mobile enough. You don't have a guy. You don't need Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson, but you do need somebody who can avoid a rush. Jameis Winston can do that. Bridgewater can do that, but I don't think Bridgewater is the type to take a 5- and 7-step drop and heave it down the field. I think he's more of a West Coast type, 3 steps and get rid of the ball. So I do not think that would be a good fit. Miami wanted him last year. He declined their 2-year offer to be a starter, to go back to be the backup to Brees, and in his mind, hopefully, the heir apparent. But if I had to pick where he fit, I would say anybody but Tampa. You know, the Tampa. If you're going to have, do you want a quarterback like Phillip Rivers, who can throw it down the field, but he's immobile? Tom Brady, he can't throw it down the field, and he's immobile. You've got to have a quarterback who can move around and play for the Buccaneers. That's why I think they'll just franchise Winston for a year and see if he can cut back on the turnovers.
What do you think of the report? Do you have a reaction at all to Tom Brady perhaps not taking tours of prospective new teams or franchises to join, but having one central meeting place and having those teams come to him?
That's one of those reports that said could, may,
yes,
might, and that way you're off the hook either way. You know, I don't see Tom, say, going to Dallas and inviting all these teams to come meet with him where he has his own tryout camp. No, I don't see that. I think if it's good enough for Peyton Manning to go to Denver and to go to Tennessee and to go to other places, I don't think Tom Brady's ego such he couldn't go too.
What did you think?
You know what? He should want to go, because he's going to want to check out the facilities. He doesn't know what the facilities are. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know how far it is from where he wants to live. He doesn't know the people in the office. He'd be smart to go to those. Narrow it down to like three teams like Peyton did, and then go visit, spend time there, get to know people, get to know the people you're going to be with the most, the strength and rehab guys, the equipment guys, your position coach. Don't just say, hey, come to me outside and meet you guys later. That's why I don't buy that.
What did you think week two of the XFL?
I'm a fan of the Houston Roughnecks and their quarterback, P.J. Walker, threw three more touchdown passes. I keep seeing media say that they don't have good quarterbacks and they don't score enough to keep the ratings up. And that could be, but Houston's not in that situation. Walker has seven touchdown passes in two games playing for June Jones, who's a quarterback guru from way back. But they've won both games at home. Now they go on the road. I have no clue who they're playing on the road. But right now they're one of the two best teams in the XFL along with the Washington Defenders. And I'm going to keep following them and hoping that they do well. For people who like football, you know, I think that like the Roughnecks have drawn 17,000 and changed two games in a row at the University of Houston Stadium. And that's fine. They have an enthusiastic crowd. And I hope that the league is successful.
You put a piece together. What was the impact that June Jones had on Patrick Mahomes?
Well, thank you for pointing that out. When Mahomes was coming off his sophomore year at Texas Tech, and I watched him because I watched every Baylor game, and I'm a fan of the Big 12 like I was the Southwest Conference, and I knew he was a quarterback who had a big arm who ran around a lot and threw a lot of passes on the run, and he could run. And he played for Cliff Kingsbury. And so June Jones, longtime agent, Lee Steinberg. Lee's been doing this since 75. And I think June was Lee a client starting in 1977 when he spent the first 5 years with the Falcons. So June has always looked at tape of the top five quarterback prospects and told Lee Steinberg, here's what I think about him. And then Lee would rank him and then try to get him as clients. And so before the 2016 season, when Mahomes was going to be a junior, June looked at that tape. He called Lee, said, you need to get this kid from Texas Tech. And he's like, well, why? He's a low second-round pick at best. He said, I'm telling you, this kid is accurate throwing the ball down the field. They're not able to protect him, and he still is accurate down the field. And if he can be accurate down the field with that arm and that mobility, he can be accurate in the short mid-range stuff. He's got some moxie to him. I'm telling you, that's the guy you should go after. At least Steinberg did, and he signed Patrick Mahomes as a client who came out after that season, and the rest is history.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. We'll get a break. We've got another segment with John coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Looks like you've been missing a lot of work lately.
I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, our guest John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, as he joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates hotline.
John, in terms of the XFL, I do want to ask you about this. I saw a note where 63% of the punts were returned compared to the NFL at 36%. Kickoffs at 90% were returned versus 34%. Is that good for the XFL to have more returns in the punt and kickoff games?
People like more returns, and what they've done, the punt returns were never a problem with injuries, always kickoff returns, guys running at each other full speed. And if anybody's watched the XFL, it's weird. The kicker is on his side of the field by himself. His blockers are 5 yards from the other team's blockers on the 35 of the other team, and the other team's return blockers. His coverage is on the opponent's 35, and the other team's blockers are on the 30. And he kicks the ball, and they can't go until they catch the ball. Same thing with a putt. A guy should have about a 10-yard radius based on the rules to catch the ball and get going. So if you have a guy who can make people miss on a punt return, you can have some good ones. And on kickoff returns, you don't have big collisions anymore.
In regard to Jason Witten, he said he wants to play another year, but he's open-minded enough to not play for Dallas. What do you think happens?
I think that who was that, Jimmy? I'm sorry.
Jason Witten.
I think, you know, with Jason Garrett gone and Mike McCarthy in there, some new coaches like having veteran players who are leaders around to help them buy into what they're selling. So it won't be surprising to me if Mike McCarthy keeps him, because he's also a favorite of Jerry Jones. And I don't think Jerry would make McCarthy keep him. But I have found a new coach, and I've got a guy on my side like Witten who's in that locker room. I'd want him there.
Tom Brady, what are the chances he re-signs with New England?
Everything I see, Jimmy, has people, including people who cover the Patriots, have him going back there. Now, Mark Davis supposedly wants him real bad in Las Vegas. And so Brady, if he's going to leave the Patriots, he's got to have a good offensive line. He's got to have good receivers and a good running game. The Raiders have everything but the receiver. But they could draft somebody. And the Colts, of course, are number one. But most of us think Phillip Rivers will be reunited with Frank Reich in Indy. They were together for years with the Chargers in San Diego. So I can't think of another team Brady would go to other than the Raiders if Mark Davis made him a preposterous offer like he did with John Gruden, $20 million a year.
John, when you take a look at the NFL, there's been a lot of talk because in your, I guess, three mock drafts into it now, but some are trying to portray Joe Burrow as being somebody who's got leverage as to be able to determine where he goes with that top pick in the draft. Do you see any kind of leverage for Burrow compared to what we saw the Manning family put in place when Eli was drafted by the Chargers?
Archie did not want Eli playing for A.J. Smith, the general manager of the Chargers, who had thought he was hell on wheels as a GM. A lot of people didn't like him. He was a good personnel man. You know, he and Marty Schottenheimer didn't speak when they went 14-2 one year. And he didn't want him playing there. And so he was able to orchestrate the trade. The Giants paid dearly to get Eli. It's working, of course, two Super Bowl wins. Phillip Rivers worked out well. They had Drew Brees, and they made the trade. And Schottenheimer wanted to keep Brees. He didn't want Rivers. And so Rivers worked out, but not like Eli, because he didn't get to a Super Bowl. So I don't see that. Eli never said a word back then. It was all Archie. And I know Joe Burrow's dad's next high school coach, and I've seen him quoted a little bit. But I don't see them trying to pull that to get away from the Bengals. You know, the Bengals have been to two Super Bowls under the ownership of Mike Brown, one with his dad, Paul, the last one with Mike. I saw Solomon Wilcox play in the secondary for them at the Super Bowl 1988, in which Joe Montana had a miracle drive and a pass to John Taylor to win it over the Bengals, and Wilcox is ripping the Bengals for not wanting to win. I thought that was very unfair. Things have changed a lot for the Bengals through the years, and I'm not sure about their coaching staff, but I think Burrow, being from Ohio, if he tried to orchestrate his way out of away from an Ohio team, I think that'd look really bad.
We hear so much about quarterbacks, and you've just highlighted a number of them that are potentially available or are simply on the market as we speak. Who do you think might be some of the other top targets in a position other than signal caller?
Well, also about the signal callers, we haven't talked about this much, but it's coming. Cam Newton, they're willing to let teams give him a physical. That means he's out of there with new coach Matt Rhule. And if indeed Tom Brady goes to Oakland, Derek Carr is going to be a free agent. They're not going to keep both of them. So there's some more quarterbacks who could be available. We all expect Marcus Mariota. And, of course, we expect there's a really good chance that Jameis Winston, but I still think he'll stay there. A couple of players really intrigue me. And remember, franchise and transition tags can both be used. A lot of these top players right now, they'll sign contracts before free agency starts, or they'll get the franchise and transition tag. Cowboys cannot pay Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper, and Byron Jones their corner. And I think if Byron Jones is the odd man out and he gets free agency, he may be the highest paid player who gets the biggest contract out there, because players at his position are so hard to come by and he's still young.
Someone suggested Dak should take a lower salary to keep some of those players. What do you think?
If Dak had a wife making $80 million a year, he could do that. People don't do that. Drew Brees didn't do it. Players don't do it. Only Tom Brady do it, and that's because, you know, he's got millions many time over. But that wouldn't be fair to Dak Prescott. And if you have a good personnel department, they can make it work. And although I saw a thing recently, and I'd have to go over this to see if it's accurate, about 8 of the last 9 Super Bowl winning quarterbacks were not on long-term contracts other than Brady. That can't be right, because Peyton won. He was on a big one. But the point was that the quarterbacks on their first contract, those are the ones most likely to win a Super Bowl because they're working off their rookie deals.
Mel Kiper said that Detroit should take Tua Tagovailoa with the 3rd pick of the draft. Do you think Tua goes that high?
I think Justin Herbert is going to end up being the fair-haired darling after Joe Burrow, after people get to know him and work him out, because he played Oregon. He didn't get much experience. He went back this season. He could have come out a year ago. They're going to love his arm, his size. Tagovailoa, of course, coming off that hip surgery. So what's Detroit going to do with Matthew Stafford? They're not going to cut him. Are they going to trade him? Who would take his contract? I just don't believe that Matthew Stafford, who's been healthy every year except last season, and some people thought he could have come back, but because they were so bad, they just kept him out. He's been really durable, like Brady and Rivers and Breeze. He's had one injury in his entire career, so I think Matthew Stafford will be back. They have too many other injuries. Too many other positions they need to fill.
John, what are you working on this week?
Well, I'm working on a column Sunday. Tell people what the Texans' offense needs to have to be one of the best in the league. And I think it'll surprise people. I have my mailbag on TexasSportsNation.com on Friday. And I've got podcasts and Facebook Live coming up Thursday. Thank you guys for asking.
All right, sure do appreciate it. John, have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
John and Jimmy, thank you very much.
Thanks, John. McClain of the Houston Chronicle. Follow his work, TexasSportsNation.com, as part of Cron.com, and on Twitter, a fantastic follow, @McClain_on_NFL. Sports Talk continues. This is 99.1 The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Last night, Tennessee a winner over Vanderbilt. Final score 65-61. Commodores had the lead into the second half, and Jimmy had a furious rally that knocked a 12-point lead for Tennessee all the way down to 2. But when it was sluggish for the Volunteers, they weren't showing much signs of life on offense. Santiago Vescovi once again provided a spark with a good pass to get it going and a key three-pointer that followed.
Yeah, he sure did. I think when you really look at his history, and yes, he's been prone to some turnovers, but my goodness, I think he's done some fantastic things. He had 14 points, he had 7 assists, he had 4 rebounds last night. Yes, he had 6 turnovers, but I think he's really done a fine job. Mike Schwartz, the assistant coach today, talked about that at the tip-off club, about how well he's played given the circumstances of him arriving in Knoxville December 28th.
Yeah, 14 games is his entire college career. All have been starts. And he's still a young 18.
And all have been SEC competition except for some team called Kansas.
Yeah.
Which is number three in the country right
at
now.
At their place.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and he had 1 week in Knoxville before that. So you're talking about 8 weeks, 2 months total in a brand new country, a new home. And so I really think that, yes, there are facets of his game that are frustrating, but I also think those are facets that will be worked out, especially the I'm going to go airborne and not know exactly what I'm going to do with the ball when I get there.
Now, Jordan Bone used to do that, and he got away with it a lot. Vescovi's not getting away with it as much. But I will say this, six of the last seven games, Vescovi has had at least five assists. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy also can stroke it from three-point range when he gets his feet set.
Yes. So I definitely think that Tennessee would be much worse off if they had not been able to add him as they did.
Yeah.
And here's what he had to say after the victory last night.
They made shots, really tough shots at the end. And, I mean, I think that was it.
Just fouled three throws there, 5 seconds left. How big were those? Obviously, it would have been a tough loss to take. And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we got really lucky on. I mean, it's not lucky because Shea Bibo's a lot of hard work in. So I think that really paid off. And making those free throws at the end, I think it was really important. We had the big, the win on that. If we missed those, then could have been like 50-50 and don't know what happens.
Sonny, just what started going right in those final 10 minutes when you guys made that run?
Sorry?
What started clicking for you guys when you made the run in the final 10 minutes?
I mean, I talked to the coaches in the halftime. I talked to some of the coaching staff and I asked them, what did they want me to do, in terms of pushing more. And they told me, we think you can push it more, in terms of the offense. And I really took that starting the second half, and I really try to push the offense all the time, trying to get easy shots, and then if not, just run the offense we do all the time. And I think that really helped us as well, as we could have some not free shots, but kind of easier than normal, and then just playing our game. I think it really helped us.
Any difference you see in Vanderbilt now versus the first time y'all played them?
Yeah, I really see a different team. I think they're way more confident right now. The game we had right there, it was a crazy game. It's I think they went 0-4, 25 threes. So we knew that they can shoot the ball, and they started making shots today. And at the end, it got really tough as they made a couple top threes. So,
Santi, was tonight the first time you've won a game and seen Rick Barnes really unhappy after the game? It seemed like y'all won, but he was not very happy.
Yeah, I think it was today the first time.
What was that? What's the thought within the team about the way that game ended?
It's kind of, we have both feelings. We're really happy because we won, and that's all that matters at the end of the day. But at the same time, we're all upset because, we didn't win the way we wanted to. We were 10 points up with no match to go, and we should have kept that difference. And just in 1 or 2 minutes, that I don't know what happened, they got almost back.
How big was John? He scored 13 points, I think, in the last 9 minutes and change. Huh?
Yeah, John's doing a really good job. I think he's getting every time better. He's playing really confident, and he does what he does. He's really good, and whenever he gets the ball, playing one-on-one or whatever, I think he's a really good player.
Once Coach Barnes thought you were looking for your shot early, was that the case? Were you trying to get some shots going early?
I really didn't feel it that way. I don't remember right now how many shots did I take, but personally, I didn't feel it. I was looking for my shot. I don't know, maybe he saw it a different way, could be. But I think we're more trying to play the game and trying to open up defense if we could. So,
Santi, the way that Fulkerson's been playing lately, after he had 0 points in the first half, did you think he was going to kind of come out there in the second half to play different?
Yeah, we need him. We need him all the time, as we need all the players. He's a really big player in the team, so we need him. And we're really thankful that he got back in the second half. He just started playing his game again, and I think that really helped us as well.
Did you make it a point to get him involved during that run? It seemed like you were kind of looking for him there.
Yeah, he talks to me all the time. On the transition, I try all the time to feed him the post, give him the ball. On the first half, it was a little harder. They were all shrinking, so gets a little tougher to pass to him. But then they start a little bit going more up on the other guards, so we have more space, and I try to feed him all the time.
Why do you think he's so good at drawing fouls?
I don't know. I think he gets fouled all the time. He's pretty strong and quick, so sometimes people just like think he's not going to attack them, and then he gets like he really surprises them. So I think that's really important for him to drive fouls all the time.
Hey, there was a couple times, you know, y'all were making that big run and you hit that big three to force them to call a timeout. You've also had some pressure free throws and things this year. Are you just a guy who's comfortable kind of in big spots like that? Are you a guy who kind of wants the ball in a situation like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think in those moments we need all the team to want the ball, and we need like just to run what we normally do. But yeah, I don't know, today I got really, I was exhausted at the end of the game, and I know that cost me one or two turnovers, but I mean, I think, I don't know what to say.
But in general, you're comfortable taking those
yeah.
shots, because some guys are just
I like it, yeah.
Sorry if you talked about it earlier. Can you talk about what Admiral Lamonte, their message to you, what was that like to hear from them?
I mean, they basically told us how they were in the same situation as we are right now, and how did it build up their team from what they had. And I think that was basically just putting a lot of work in and trying to get all together as a unit. And I think we're really facing in that direction. We just need to get work done. And I don't know, it really helped us. I think it really helped us having them too, being like really important people in the Tennessee basketball program. And I really think they're going to like really motivate us with that kind of talks.
Santiago Vescovi, again, another solid performance by him last night with his 14 points against Vanderbilt, 7 assists, 4 rebounds.
That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment to hour number 3 of Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Turn us up and embarrass the Alabama fan that sits in the next cubicle. This is 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Final segment to hour number 3 of Sports Talk with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. Still to come on our program, we look forward to being joined by Mike Barnett, a longtime Indians assistant as he's worked with Terry Francona and the Cleveland Indians. He'll join us to talk about Major League Baseball and a lot about the Astros and the reaction to the scandal with Houston. We look forward to bringing you a practice report with Eric Kane, and we've got still other things to get to between now and the end of the program.
Renia Davis, Lady Vols, she's on the Wade watch list. There are 40 members on that list. That's a National Player of the Year award. She's averaging 18.1 points, 8.1 rebounds. In SEC games only, Davis is averaging 20.1 points. She's having an outstanding junior season for the Lady Vols. And they will be in action again Thursday night.
Yep, tomorrow night at Arkansas. It's another big game.
Boy, Arkansas's got a tremendous player, and Tennessee's had difficulty shutting down real good players. What was it, Kennedy Carter had 37?
Yes.
And they got a really good player at Arkansas. We'll see if Tennessee can deal with that. Also, and this excuse me, this note came to mind last night as I watched Tennessee and Vanderbilt, and then I watched Kentucky and LSU. Well, Tennessee held on to that 12-point lead in the last minute or so. Kentucky led by about 15 against LSU and almost let it get away. LSU had 22 offensive rebounds that they converted into 24 points. But how about this? The last 3 weeks before last Tuesday, the last three Tuesday night games in the SEC, teams overcame deficits of 20, 19, 16, 15. The 15-point deficit was when Tennessee came back to beat Alabama. 14, 13, 12, and 11. 8 times on Tuesday night games in the SEC in the 3 weeks leading up to last night, there were rallies like that to overcome deficits. And so Tennessee survived it. Kentucky survived it. And it's just kind of wild. I don't know what the Wednesday games look like as far as comeback, but those Thursday games have been crazy. And with Kentucky, we mentioned earlier, they in their last three halves of play, they were horrible from three-point range. And then they hit their first 7 threes in the second half against LSU. what were they, 4 for 34 before that. And here was another interesting stat about Kentucky against LSU last night. These were jump shots. So this could be a three-pointer. It could be a 12-footer. Kentucky on jump shots in the first half against LSU, 3 for 24. Jump shots and scored 8 points, two of them threes. Second half on jump shots, 11 of 15, 29 points. Huge difference in Kentucky shooting as they got over the hump. As Calipari was said to, I don't remember if it was halftime or maybe it was before the game, he said, you know what? You're not going to make all your shots, but you can't miss them all either.
Right.
And so he was getting a little bit upset about that. But anyway, nice win for Kentucky last night against LSU in Baton Rouge.
Let's get a call from Steve. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hey, guys. I love your show as usual. I just had a quick question about Lady Vol basketball. I really like Coach Harper, and I think she's going to do very, very well at the university. I'm a little concerned with her time management at the end of the game and having 30-plus seconds left and getting the clock down to 9 seconds before we shoot or foul. In situations, I really thought she had plenty of opportunity to win that game with Texas A&M, and I just want to hang up and listen to your thoughts.
I'll say this. The announcers themselves commented on the same thing, that if you were going to foul, why didn't you do it much earlier in the clock? Because they wound up fouling with like 9 seconds to go. And that is, you don't know if they're – every now and then, it's funny that you can have somebody who's trying to make a play on the ball to foul somebody intentionally, and they don't call it. They let it play through in an end-of-game situation. I don't think that there was. Tennessee did not make a concerted effort. You just wonder every now and then whether or not the message that is said in the team huddle actually filters on down. Jimmy, I think we've seen it with both the Vols and the Lady Vols that there has to be some frustration with what the coaches are telling the game plan is, or here's what we're going to do right here, right now, and yet the team doesn't go out and immediately execute it the way they were just told.
We heard Rick Barnes say last night, we better play smarter. I think the same applies with the Lady Vols at times when you watch them. They better play smarter. And I don't know if that's a total lack of buy-in. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's maybe basketball IQ. I don't know if it's being clearly instructed to players what to do at specific situations. I don't know all of those things. I just know when I watch the Lady Vols, at times it's a little bit, just as it was with the Vols last night in the last minute, it was frustrating to watch. It's frustrating at times to watch the Lady Vols commit senseless, unforced turnovers at times. And yet I see that if they could eliminate some of those, they got a chance to be a pretty good basketball team. But those turnovers keep shooting them in the foot, getting in their way. And if they could just cut them down by 5 a game, because they're averaging about 17, they need to get down to about 12. They're a pretty good basketball team when they only commit 10 or 12 turnovers.
Yeah, you were down in the game at the time, and so it wasn't as though all you had to do was come up with a stop and get the ball. You needed, obviously, a stop, but they needed a steal. Or to foul. And then when all was said and done, after letting as much time elapse off the clock as they did, Carter was the one that they fouled, and it's like, there are 4 people and perhaps a couple on the bench I would go to and actually put hands on before I would put Kennedy Carter back at the line again. She's just that kind of player.
Yeah, and of course the good teams try to get the ball into the best free throw shooter's hands.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have the opportunity to foul somebody, well, it's like I was watching LSU last night. Kentucky inbounds it to Nick Richards, and LSU didn't get over quick enough to foul him, and he gets it to a better free throw shooter. I don't remember if it was Quickly or not. But they get it to one of their better free throw shooters. He goes and nails 2 free throws, and boom, that's it. But when you have the opportunity to foul one of the other team's worst free throw shooters, you do it. And you don't let the clock run from 30 seconds to 9 before you foul somebody. So you just have to play a little bit smarter in those key moments.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. Coming up, hour number 4 of Sports Talk, a practice report with Eric Kane. We'll be joined by Mark Barnett as he joins us from Cleveland Indians spring training. And up next is your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6 on 99.1, The Sports Animal.